Well, hello, hello. Welcome to the Center Ice Podcast here on 91.1 WHFC. My name is Seth Chasen, your host. And boy, am I excited to bring this to you. The inaugural episode of Center Ice, Harford County's home of hockey talk. So for today's show, it's our inaugural episode, our first episode, and we're going to keep it simple. I'm going to talk about a couple things, the trade deadline most notably. We're going to talk about my top four cup favorites, teams that are poised to win the Stanley Cup in my eyes, teams that I think have the best shot at winning the cup. And then we're going to talk about some current events in hockey. And from there, we're going to go talk about some college hockey. So I'm excited for that. It is a hockey show after all. So what is, you know, a hockey podcast without college hockey? But I'm going to just start you off right away. And we just had the trade deadline pass. Time of recording this, it was a week after. So this is Friday when I'm recording this. We have some winners. We have some losers at the trade deadline. I highlighted four teams on the winning side and four teams on the losing side. Number one, I'd say the number one winner overall, the Boston Bruins. I hate saying that as a Penguins fan, but they are far and away the best team in the league this year, and they only made themselves stronger at the deadline. They added Tyler Bertuzzi of the Detroit Red Wings, obviously now Boston Bruin. Dmitry Orlov, Garnet Hathaway of the Capitals, now obviously Boston Bruins. They already are a scary team, but when you add names like that to your roster, I mean, come on. But I think they have a pretty good shot at the Stanley Cup this year. One of the favorites, again, as a Penguins fan, I hate saying that. They added, you know, some other players. They got rid of some draft picks, but they're in win now mode with the aging core that they have. Obviously, with Patrice Bergeron, their captain, I mean, he's getting up there in age. Don't know how many more seasons he has left. But, you know, you got guys like Taylor Hall and Nick Foligno who are out on injury. And they already have a very deadly team without those two names, which are big names to this squad. And players that are quite frankly leaders of that team. When they come back for the playoffs, oh my God, it's going to be game over for these teams. And, I mean, moving on, just a couple miles west and, I guess, north, a little bit northwest here in New York. I'm going to go to the Rangers as my second winner of this trade deadline. I mean, come on, you get Patty Kane, Cooper Zech for two picks and two prospects. I mean, that in it of itself is an absolute fleece. I don't know how you get away with that. It's highway robbery. You pick up Vladimir Tarasenko and Nico Mikkola from the St. Louis Blues, who, again, the Blues had a very good deadline. They were sellers, so they got rid of a lot of players, but they brought in some prospects. They brought in some other talent around the league. We'll get to them in a minute here. But they basically got much, much better. They have a very deadly top six. I mean, you've got Patty Kane. I believe he's right now on the second line, but you got Vladimir Tarasenko. You reunite two now former Blackhawks in Artemi Panarin, who's been the far and away leader with Mika Zibanejad over there in the Big Apple. I mean, that team, again, as a Penguins fan, I hate saying this, but the Rangers are one of those teams that they're going to come out of the Eastern Conference. They're going to be in the conference final. I'm telling you that right now. That is a Seth Chasen guarantee. Unfortunately, I think they will be in the Eastern Conference final. And then again, another team that I hate saying won the trade deadline. I mean, as a Pittsburgh Penguins fan, again, I hate to see the Capitals get better. But they're not in locked and loaded, ready to go win a Stanley Cup mode right now. They did exactly what they needed to do. They got a little younger. They got some draft picks. They shedded some cap. They traded arguably their second best defenseman in Dmitry Orlov to the Boston Bruins. And their gritty forward, Garnet Hathaway, for Craig Smith, who's a forward, a 2023 first round pick, a 2024 third round pick, a 2025 second round pick, and they moved on from players like Lars Eller, Erik Gustafsson, and Marcus Johansson, who was on his second stint with Washington. He was acquired last trade deadline from the Minnesota Wild. Now is traded back to the Minnesota Wild for a draft pick. They got a star defenseman in Rasmus Sandin, 23 years old. So they are young, and they are, I wouldn't say they're really young. They're one of the older teams in the league. Obviously, when you've got Ovi, you've got Nicholas Backstrom, you've got guys who are up there in age, you know, you're always going to be good because they're still very good for their age. Same thing with Crosby, Malkin, and Letang in Pittsburgh. Again, we'll get to them in a minute. But right now, they're locked and loaded to get Alexander Ovechkin his record, the record that he's going to break. 892 goals is the current record, the goal record in the NHL, for those of you who don't know. Ovechkin, last time I checked, was at like 816. Unreal. He's like 38 years old, and he's still putting up these numbers. I mean, come on. But again, I hope, as a Penguins fan, I hope Ovi gets that record. I don't think they win another Stanley Cup in the next few years, unless something miraculous happens where they just go on a tear and they're just unstoppable, or they acquire some, you know, large free agent, which I doubt is going to happen. But again, I am not a seer. I can't see the future, but I know, all I know is Alexander Ovechkin is going to get his record with the core intact. And that was part of his contract negotiation. Like, hey, keep the core together, get me my record, I'm cool. He got his Stanley Cup. But the last winner that I would say, again, there are some other winners of the deadline, but I'd say these are the four big winners of the deadline. The Ottawa Senators, which is more of a surprise. I think some people, it was kind of more in the middle with this team. They got younger. They got better. The Sens landed the biggest trade bait of the deadline in Jacob Chychrun, a blue liner who is just, he's very young. He's very fast. He's very mobile. He can put up points. He's one of those guys that is going to make a difference immediately. And coming from a Arizona Coyotes squad that they were rather lackluster, they weren't very exciting, they're not good. Arizona is a team that is the joke of the NHL, and where they are now retaining, they've got so much dead cap. I saw a weird stat the other day that the Arizona Coyotes are like paying their players $45 million while they have $35 million in dead cap. So for those of you who don't know, dead cap is when you have like a retention on the books, when you make a trade, or when you have someone's contract that's like not playing. So for example, Shea Weber on long-term injured reserve, I think it's kind of genuinely and generally accepted that he has retired at this point, but he hasn't put in the paperwork to retire. So his contract is on the books, which, I mean, it's unfortunate that we're not going to see any more Shea Weber, but his contract's on the Arizona Coyotes. And again, I wouldn't come out of retirement, or I wouldn't come out of injury and want to play for the Arizona Coyotes. They're a team that isn't getting any better, though they've got a very young and promising future. That's not going to be for another 5-6 years. You're going to see a long, grueling rebuild that they've been in since like 2010. They really haven't been good since 2010. They've never made the Cup final. I think the closest they came was a second round. I could be wrong. But again, they made a bunch of moves, getting rid of Jacob Chychrun, 24 years old. He still has time left on his contract. And again, like I said, he's a player that can make an impact immediately. Surrounded by a way better lineup, and you know, he's only going to be able to accelerate the rebound that the Ottawa Senators have been on. They weren't good for a while after 2017. Once they made that run to the Eastern Conference Final, only to have it ended by Chris Kunitz in double overtime, which, man, I can revel in that game all day long. I remember I stayed up till the crack of dawn watching that game on the edge of my seat. Obviously, our back-to-back run happening 2016, 2017. So that was definitely a very high stress game for me to watch. But with that being said, we're going to move on from our winners and we're going to get to the losers. I'm going to save the one team for last because that's going to be a longer tangent. But I'm going to go immediately with the Vancouver Canucks. I mean, they had a very bad trade deadline. Former general manager of the Penguins, Jim Rutherford, now the Vancouver Canucks man in the office. They've had a very rough season. It didn't help that they moved on from their captain, Bo Horvat, right before the NHL All-Star break, which technically isn't trade deadline, but it's close enough. They acquired Beauvillier and Atu Ratti out of that trade. They moved on from William Lockwood, Riley Stillman, Luke Shen, which is the bigger name out of these four players, and Wyatt Kelnyk, a second-round pick in 2023, a 2026 seventh. So they kind of gave up a good amount. They really didn't bring much in other than Philip Aronik, Beauvillier, as mentioned, Ratti. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that properly, and Vitaly Kravtsov. And they brought in a couple draft picks, but again, not really the best trade deadline. They were supposed to trade JT Miller or Brock Besser. Brock Besser was the name kind of going around the rumor mill. Arizona and Pittsburgh were apparently interested. Pittsburgh almost, I guess, made a trade for Brock Besser, which is something I'll get into a little later. Adding to that, Cap Friendly actually projects the Canucks will have about $894,000 in available cap ahead of next season. So I'm not sure what they're going to do in the offseason. They don't really have many expiring deals, but if they want to go out and make their team better, this is going to be a rough offseason. I think Vancouver fans have the right to be upset with management for not making their team better and just kind of, although we're staying younger, they just don't have a team that's going to be able to compete for a little bit. And again, they can correct me, you know, by going off next season. I don't see them making a playoff run for quite some time here. But moving on, we got the Philadelphia Flyers. We talked about this on Night Owls Tonight. The Flyers are 24, 29, and 11. The Flyers have faced a lot of struggles these last few seasons, especially the last two. Management not doing great. And before I typed this up, I didn't see what happened. I'd probably typed my script up on like Thursday or Wednesday. As of about 12 o'clock today, Chuck Fletcher, the general manager of the Philadelphia Flyers, got fired. Flyers fans enjoying that moment. They didn't like the way he was handling things. Obviously, he flubbed on the James Van Riemsdyk moves. He was huge trade bait. Like, people thought he was going to be moved. There was a deal for him. It fell through with the Red Wings last second. That offer was the only offer that they got for him at the deadline. And that came in at about 1:40, about an hour and 20 minutes before the trade deadline at 3 o'clock on last Friday. And they kind of brought in some people. They brought in Brandon Lemieux, who's 26 years old, and a fifth-round pick in 2024 for Zach MacEwen, who's going to the LA Kings. Isaac Ratcliffe was traded to the Preds. He's 24, so he's one of the younger guys that could have made an impact on the Flyers roster, but the Flyers got rid of him for future considerations. Patrick Brown, age 30, was traded for a sixth-round pick in 2023. So the Flyers not picking up much. They were supposed to be sellers at the deadline. They really didn't sell anything important for any type of return. Which brings us to our next loser, the Los Angeles Kings. The Los Angeles Kings clearly lost the Jacob Chychrun sweepstakes. The Kings opted for another defenseman in Gorochkov from the Columbus Blue Jackets. But there were a lot of people that lost in that race. The Pittsburgh Penguins were rumored to be interested in Chychrun. Head coach Mike Sullivan was hoping that we would get him. He would certainly help our blue line, but obviously that didn't work out. But the LA Kings traded away their star goaltender, Jonathan Quick, who it was kind of shocking to see him moved because he's been a big part of LA for years, part of that 2012 and 2014 run to the Stanley Cup, eventually winning. He's been a big part of that organization. And to see management move on from him, it's kind of upsetting. So he's traded from the LA Kings to the Columbus Blue Jackets and then the Blue Jackets to the Knights because he didn't want to play in Ohio, which I don't blame him. The Columbus Blue Jackets aren't the greatest squad, but, I mean, he could have added some value to that team. Jonas Korpisalo heading to the Kings in that Gerakov deal. That trade actually happened a day before the official deadline, before Chychrun was moved. So jaws dropped immediately across the league. The conditional first-round pick in the 2023 and third-round selection of 2024 seemed to be oddly greater than what the Senators gave up to acquire Chychrun, which is like kind of shocking because, I mean, if you gave the Arizona Coyotes those picks, I mean, you probably could have gotten them. The Ottawa Senators got Chychrun for cheap as opposed to what we all thought was going to go down. But they also acquire Zach MacEwen for Brandon Lemieux and a draft pick, which is basically a fourth-liner swap, a kind of small deal that really doesn't make any sense. Only offers an extra about $425 in cap space. Doesn't really do much to make the team better or make them worse. I mean, they kind of stayed the same, which is definitely not the goal of the NHL trade deadline. So last but not least, I would say the number one loser of this trade deadline, my Pittsburgh Penguins. It pains me to say that because I'm a huge Penguins fan. I'm a diehard Penguins fan. I've been a fan since I was a little kid. And to see management going about the final couple years of 87, 71, and 58, the big three, the three-headed monster, it is just heartbreaking and it angers me. You know, I shouldn't be this angry about things that are out of my control. Like, I can't control how the general manager runs his business. But Ron Hextall has made a laughingstock of this team. And in my opinion, this is my opinion, let me clarify that. He's been horrible for this organization. We could have done so many better things with a different general manager. I'm not saying that I can do better than him. That's not what I'm saying. We needed to have gotten younger, faster, more exciting, not older, slower, and worse. I mean, we picked up a 31-year-old in Michael Granlund, a 32-year-old in Dmitry Kulikov, who, in my opinion, he's not a great defenseman. He is overpaid. We should not have traded for him. Nick Bonino, again, it's a great story bringing the 34-year-old Nick Bonino back to the Pittsburgh Penguins. He was part of the back-to-back run, but he's 34. He's not the same player he was when he was with Pittsburgh all those years ago. And, I mean, Michael Granlund's a third-liner, dude. Like, he's paid $5 million to be a third-liner. He's not a great player. There are so many moves that should have been made that weren't. I mean, you cleared cap space. We all thought you were going after Brock Besser, right? Brock Besser being one of the biggest trade baits of this trade deadline. We didn't get him. Vancouver didn't trade him. I mean, you could have gotten so many different players that were younger, faster, better, stronger, that would have been great on our roster, but no. Ron Hextall had to mess it up, make us older, make us slower. Now I saw a stat that the Penguins are the oldest team in NHL history. That is sad. That should not be something you're proud of. I mean, it's horrible what this management team and this general manager is doing to the Pittsburgh Penguins. In my opinion, we need to get Fenway Sports Group out of there, get Ron Hextall out of there, get someone who knows what he's doing and actually wants to win. I mean, it's a disgrace. I mean, we got rid of 29-year-old Brock McGinn to bring in a 34-year-old. Like, come on. We put Kasperi Kapanen on waivers. Again, I know he wasn't having a strong season. He really hasn't had a strong outing with the Pittsburgh Penguins, but he's a fan favorite. He's a locker room guy. Everyone loves him. And you got rid of him for nothing. St. Louis picked him up. And I mean, now you're worse than ever. You traded easily one of the most elite penalty killers in the NHL, 29-year-old Teddy Bluger, one of my favorite players. And again, this upsets me because we got an AHL player for him and a draft pick. I mean, come on. You could have done so much better. I'm just very upset with Ron Hextall personally because of the way he's conducting business. Again, I'm not saying I can do any better. I'm not saying that, you know, you should put me in charge of the Penguins front office, but come on. I mean, we need to get someone in there who wants to win. It doesn't seem like Ron Hextall wants to win. I joked tonight on Night Owls about Ron Hextall being a plant from the Flyers organization just to ruin the Penguins from the inside. Again, it's a joke, but it honestly has some merit at this point. And it's just kind of upsetting to me that the Pittsburgh Penguins organization isn't appalled by us getting older, slower. I mean, heck, last night on Thursday, we lost in overtime to a team that we should have beat. We keep on losing in overtime. We keep on blowing leads. And I'm not saying this is any coaching. I think Mike Sullivan is one of the best coaches of all time, certainly in Penguins history, but I'd be willing to say, I mean, he's one of the best coaches, and the guys love him, they respect him. There's no reason to move on from him. We need to move on from management. I mean, come on. Like, this is upsetting, and I'm going to get off this train because I know it's going to infuriate me even more, but again, the Penguins have not gotten any better at the trade deadline. But I do want to kind of carry on into another little segment here. We have some honorable mentions for winners in this trade deadline. Before we get off the trade deadline stuff, the Nashville Predators had a very active trade deadline. They shed a bunch of cap. They brought in a lot of draft picks, acquiring some young, promising players such as Isaac Ratcliffe, Cal Foote, which, mind you, in the Cal Foote trade, they absolutely destroyed the Lightning. I don't know why you would give up so much to get a player in return for Cal Foote and like a bunch of draft picks. I mean, that was just, we were all kind of in shock that, like, wow, Lightning should not have given up so much in that trade. But I mean, hey, you're Nashville, highway robbery there. And they brought in Edmonton Oilers star Tyson Barrie to kind of help out that blue line. Another team that did pretty well at the trade deadline is the New Jersey Devils. They brought in a lot of new faces, most notably Timo Meier of the San Jose Sharks, who will definitely add some speed and danger to the already young and powerful team. That's a team that I do not want to face in the first round. They've got a very good team, a very young team, and they're going to be good for a while. So, I mean, good on the Devils for being able to come up with a huge trade to acquire Timo Meier, who, again, was another one of those big trade baits of the season. And also, last but not least, the St. Louis Blues. They did sell. They were sellers at the trade deadline. They weren't going to contend this year. So they got some picks. They got a lot of draft picks. So they traded away their captain, Ryan O'Reilly, to the Toronto Maple Leafs. They traded Vladimir Tarasenko to the Rangers while acquiring players like Jacob Varana, Adam Gaudette. They acquired two 2023 first-round picks, a 2024 second and fourth. They picked up a 2023 third, all while picking up one of my favorite players, Kasperi Kapanen, through the waiver wire. They were a lot better off than they were, say, 4 months ago. They've got a young team now. They've got a lot of draft picks, so they'll draft well, hopefully. I mean, I don't have anything against the St. Louis Blues. I mean, they're a pretty cool organization. I love their jerseys. I mean, there's really nothing to hate about them. I know some Penguins fans might disagree with that take, but I mean, I don't mind the St. Louis Blues now because they have Cappy. I might like them a little more. That was my trade deadline talk, but moving on. But we're going to get into some like some current events going on in the NHL right now. So Connor McDavid, I mean, wow. Just wow. This guy has put up a just tremendous amount of points. 124 plus points so far in the regular season. He's played about 65 games and he's only 26. So we're only in the like beginning stages of his prime. He is on pace to finish with 156 points, which would be the most in NHL history by anyone not named Wayne Gretzky and Mario Lemieux. He would surpass the 155 points that Detroit Steve Yzerman piled up in the 88 and 89 season. McDavid is also on pace for the most points by any player since Mario Lemieux's 161 in 95-96. So that is just unreal to do at that young of an age. And we're just only seeing the beginning here of Connor McDavid, folks. I mean, that is just absolutely insane. So that was my segment on the NHL trade deadline that happened on the 3rd of March. Did you guys agree or did you disagree? Let me know in the DMs of the podcast Instagram page. That's centerice_pod. On Instagram. You can let me know, did you have other teams that you thought lost or did worse at the trade deadline than teams that I did mention? Let me know and we'll have a discussion. I'll bring it up next show. So this is a segment that I'm going to do weekly because a lot can change in the standings in the NHL. Up next, we're going to talk about my top four picks for winning the Stanley Cup this year. Two from the Eastern, two from the Western. And again, it's going to be weekly, so things might change, and my opinions might change based on the standings of these squads. My first choice to win the Stanley Cup from the Eastern Conference would be the Boston Bruins. I mean, that's an obvious one right there. Give me that one. They've got 105 points as of recording this. They've already eclipsed 50 wins. They set an NHL record. 50 wins in 65 games, which is just unreal. We all know what happens with the President's Trophy curse. Usually they don't win the Stanley Cup. Last year, a team did. The Colorado Avalanche won the Stanley Cup after winning the President's Trophy. So I think the Boston Bruins have probably the best shot at winning the Stanley Cup. And then the next team I have, the Hurricanes. Again, I wouldn't mind seeing the Hurricanes win the Stanley Cup. I mean, I don't have any problems with the Carolina Hurricanes. I honestly would like to see Brent Burns get a Stanley Cup, see some of those guys get a Stanley Cup, Max Pacioretty, players that are really deserving of a Stanley Cup. They've got a very, very solid squad, 43-13-8, 94 points on the season, number one in the Metropolitan Division. That's a team I would like to see win a Stanley Cup, if it's not the Penguins. But you know, you got a really solid lineup there. They're a really strong, fast team. They have fantastic chemistry as well. They've got the perfect blend of veteran and young, fast players. So I think they probably have, you know, a really good shot at winning a Stanley Cup this season. But moving on to the Western Conference, I'm going to go with the Seattle Kraken. Though they've kind of fallen off as of late, it's a very, very tight race in the Pacific Division. The Vegas Golden Knights at 86 points, Kings at 85, which is actually a shock to me. I figured that there would be teams above the Kings. All I've heard about this season are the Kings' woes, but they're at 85 points, and the Kraken behind them with 81. So I'm going to say the Kraken are my team coming out of the West. They've got a very young team. They've got a very energized team. They've been outstanding this season to begin the year, the 2023 calendar year. They, I believe, went on like a 9-game win streak. something ridiculous like that. But the Kraken are really good. They're 37-22-7. They've got a fantastic lineup with Jared McCann, Jordan Eberle, guys like that who are going to carry the team. Though they don't have a lot of playoff experience, I think that those are going to be the guys that they turn to. They've got Grubauer, who has won a Stanley Cup with the Washington Capitals back in 2018. So he's got some experience. He'll be able to mentor these guys and say, hey, keep a cool head, do what the goalies do, and I think they'll be just fine. So that's one of my teams coming out of the Western Conference. And I'm going to shake it up here. I'm going to go in the same division, the Pacific Division. I'm going to go the Vegas Golden Knights. I think they have probably the second best chance coming out of the Western Conference. But again, they have Mark Stone on injured reserve right now, making like $9 million, allowed Vegas to make some moves in order to get better at the trade deadline. So when Mark Stone comes back for the playoffs, it's going to be like the Tampa Bay Lightning in 2020-2021 when they won their Mickey Mouse rings. Again, I'm not going to get into it. This might be something for a later show, but those two rings were COVID cups and Mickey Mouse rings. You cannot change my mind. They were $17 or $18 million over the cap in 21, which was ridiculous. I know, again, it's a loophole that teams can expose, which, I mean, there's really no solving that, but I think it's unfair to other teams who work their tail off to get to that point just to get demolished by a team that's $18 million over the cap. But anyway, I'm going to move on from that. But I think the Vegas Golden Knights, Seattle Kraken, the two expansion franchises, have the best shot at coming out of the West and potentially winning a Stanley Cup. But I think the main obstacle will be the Boston Bruins. They're just unstoppable this year. Not many teams have been able to solve them. Mind you, 15 teams have figured out how to solve the Bruins. Maybe add 2-3 more in there by the time playoff rolls around. But, I mean, these Boston Bruins are the heavy favorites right now. And I don't see much stopping them, unfortunately. As a Penguins fan, it pains me to say the Bruins are really, really good. And with the way things are shaping up, we're going to have to face them in the first round, which is, not good for us. I will say that. I just think that it's going to be a very, very interesting playoffs because you've got a lot of teams that have been bad for so many years that really haven't had much success, if at all. Namely, the Devils, which are going to be a surprise team. I would watch out for them as well. My opinion for the Eastern Conference might change if the Devils, who are creeping up on those Hurricanes, 92 points for the Devils, 94 for the Hurricanes, a game in hand for the Devils. The last 17 games are going to be very important for the Devils if they want to prove something. They have not been the best team in the past few years. They finally found their footing and they are on the brink of a playoff berth. I think the Devils are going to be a team to watch out for. They're going to be scary. So that'll be a story that I will keep my eye on. And my opinion might change. I might actually take the Devils over the Hurricanes come the end of the season. Heck, the Devils might lose 15 straight games. It's highly unlikely, but it's still a possibility. And they could fall to the Rangers and Penguins. Penguins have 78 points. The Rangers have 84 at the time of recording. So we'll see what happens with these squads as they're all fighting for a playoff spot here in the NHL. That was my top four teams that I think have the best chance to win the Stanley Cup. Again, did you guys agree or disagree with that take? Let me know in the DMs of the Center Ice Podcast Instagram. Again, that is Center Ice_pod. So go check that out. Go follow it and let me know what you thought. Now for our third segment, we're going to talk about some current events, current news. I only have one story to really talk about, the Tampa Bay Lightning Vegas Golden Knights game that totaled 144 penalty minutes. Something that shocked me when I read this for the first time. I saw an article the other day. I looked up current events for NHL, and I didn't know this until I saw this. During the Vegas Golden Knights Tampa Bay Lightning game at Amalie Arena in Tampa Bay, Florida, all hell broke loose. to say the least. 122 penalty minutes were handed out at one time. The total penalty minutes during that game was a whopping 144, roughly. There was a huge line brawl, which is something I love seeing in the game of hockey. You know, you'll have people coming out against fighting like, oh, it's dangerous. Yeah, I know it's dangerous, but it also makes the game a little more entertaining. It brings more excitement out of the game because you hear people go into the game for the first time, right? They've never been to an NHL game before in person. Like, oh, I hope they fight. You know, some games you won't have a single fight. Sometimes you'll get a fierce rivalry. One person touches another person and that's it. All ham. It's free game. I like the fighting. I think the fighting in a rudimentary sense is great for the game of hockey. It brings more exposure because people want to see fights. It's the only game in which you can fight someone else on the other team and come back 5 minutes later, right? It adds some more energy into the game, per se. But getting back to this story here, so this whole debacle started with a high sticking from Pat Maroon on Keegan Kolsar. And they kind of went at it, and then other people just started joining in. Corey Perry, of course, a tough customer in of itself, definitely throwing some hands in that one. So when the dust settled at Amalie Arena, this is what the score sheet read. 12-16, Pat Maroon high-sticking against Keegan Kolsar, served by Ross Colton. Zach Bogosian roughing against Keegan Kolsar. Keegan Kolsar roughing against Zach Bogosian. Both players, Bogosian and Kolsar, got a misconduct. Pat Maroon high-sticking against Keegan Kolsar. Brett Howden roughing against Pat Maroon. Maroon-Howden misconducts. Hayden Fleury roughing against Teddy Bluger. Hayden Fleury game misconduct. Teddy Bluger roughing against Hayden Fleury. Teddy Bluger game misconduct. Corey Perry roughing against Nick Hague. Corey Perry misconduct. Zach Whitecloud roughing against Michael Acemont. Nicholas Hague roughing against Corey Perry. Nicholas Hague misconduct. Michael Acemont misconduct. Michael Acemont roughing against Zach Whitecloud and a Zach Whitecloud game misconduct. There were less than 10 minutes remaining in regulation, which meant early departures from Maroon, Kolsar, Perry, Bogosian, Howden, Fleury, Bluger, Hague, Acemont, and Whitecloud. Because for those of you who aren't aware, game misconducts are 10-minute penalties. So they did not see the ice time for the rest of the game, which is just, again, that's unreal, the amount of game misconducts, the amount of penalties that went out. But that I like that. I like the ferocity in hockey. I like the tenacity, players going after each other. I love that in the game of hockey. I would hope we see more of it in the future. Again, I'm not advocating for line brawls every game. I think we need to have some more fighting. I think fighting should be a mainstay in the game. I'm not saying they should be fighting every game. I think there's a time and a place for it, but I don't think that the NHL should be cracking down on them. I don't think the referees should be able to hop on top of the players before they even drop the mitts. They should just let it go, especially goaltender fights. The amount of goalie fights that happened this week alone in the ECHL and the AHL, it's crazy. I can't tell you the last time I saw a goalie tilly in the NHL, which is something that I love to see. Like, everyone loves to see a goalie fight. The fact that the goalies leave their nets and meet at center ice, and it's just a huge standoff between these two just massive players, that's what I love about the game, you know? But before I get off on a tangent about more fighting in the NHL, I've got to get off this topic. Might be another rant for another day, but I think that I'd prefer to leave that alone for now. And as mentioned before, what is a hockey podcast without college hockey? Something that I'm really excited to talk about. Frozen Four is coming up. So here are my four teams I think have the best shot at making it to the Frozen Four. We're just over a week away from selections. Obviously, number one, Minnesota Gophers. They are 25-8-1, 19-4-1 in the Big Ten. They're just lethal in every way. They've got Logan Cooley, who's third in national scoring, and Jimmy Snuggerud, who is fourth in national scoring. Matthew Nyes, who sits sixth in national goals, while having over a point per game, 39 in 34. No team can match that three-headed monster right there. They have huge two-way threats in defense. So Jackson Lacombe and Brock Faber, the netminder, the guy backing it all up, Justin Close, he's had a strong season. He's got a 928 save percentage. He ranks fourth in the college hockey world. And obviously, we can't not talk about Denver, the Pioneers, 28-8-0, 19-5-0 in NCHC. They're as strong as ever. They're just playing fantastic hockey as of late. Massimo Rizzo has taken off, and he's got 46 points in 36 games. Carter Mazar, 22 goals. He remains one of the most dangerous scoring threats in D1, which when you have a top scorer on your team, you're never really going to be bad. And Denver just has a lot of them. They have a lot of scoring threats everywhere. In net, Magnus Crona, still a solid, capable of stealing a game. So when you've got a good backstop like that, you're not going to toss up many games. DU has quality wins against Western Michigan, St. Cloud, Notre Dame, Big Ten teams, even Alaska and Omaha. Denver has been there before, so they know how to win. They know what it takes to win. So that's a team that you're going to have to keep an eye on in the Frozen Four. Can't go anywhere without talking about Michigan. The Wolverines are 22-11-3. They're 12-10-2 in the Big Ten. They haven't had a very good Big Ten outing, but their overall record shows you a lot of what you need to know. They're ranked fourth in the pairwise. They have had a much more consistent second half, winning 11 of 15. And Adam Fantinelli leads the nation with 56 points, 25 goals, 31 assists in just 31 games. Luke Hughes is the country's top defenseman, hands down, drafted by the New Jersey Devils in the offseason last season. He has scored some clutch goals down the stretch and enjoying second half production, which has been big for his squad. And so Michigan, again, is going to be a favorite. In net, Eric Portillo has dealt with some inconsistencies, but he's been better in the second half of the season as a whole. The whole team has really picked it up in the second half, knowing what's on the line. And I feel like that's why, because they've been so hot recently, is why Michigan is going to be a team to watch when it comes to the Frozen Four. And then obviously, again, another team you cannot not talk about when discussing the Frozen Four is Boston. Boston has always been a very good team when it comes to college hockey. 24-10-0 overall, 18-6-0 in the HEA. Had a four-game losing streak in February. May have scared some people off, but BU came out strong. They recovered nicely towards the end of the season here. So Lane Hutson is having a historic season as a freshman defenseman with 43 points. Yes, you heard that right. 43 points as a freshman defenseman. 12 goals, 31 assists, 33 games. So on top of having 43 points in 33 games, you know who else has 43 points in 33 games? Well, Matt Brown. He's having a career year over at BU. 15-28-43, so 43 points, 15 goals, 28 assists. That season's still going on. Depth scoring has picked up in the second half as well between Wilmer Skoog. The center has been playing out of his mind. So in the last 10 games, he has scored 8 points. The last 5, he scored 5 points, so a point per game, 3 goals, 2 assists in the last 5, which has been unreal. He's definitely picked it up in the latter half of the season. And Jay O'Brien, in his last 10 games, he's put up 8 points, 3 goals, 5 assists, and his last 5, 1 goal and 4 assists. totaling 5 points. So a point per game for him as well in that last five. He's been a contributing factor for this Boston squad.
While a number of freshmen like Jay Green and Jeremy Wilmer have also stepped up big time and helped their team out, they have a fantastic goalie in Drew Commesso. He has had some ups and downs in goal. He also has two shutouts in his last three games played. When he's on his game, man, nobody can match him. They're favorites in the Hockey East, and they have some impressive wins, including victories over the likes of Michigan in the Big Ten, Harvard, ECAC, and Cornell, same league. Checking in at fifth on pairwise. We'll see if that little streak in February was a fluke for the Terriers. So that's our college hockey talk. I would like to talk some more college hockey. I got to pay attention to the season a little bit more as we're winding down to Frozen Four, which is going to be an exciting series to watch. Thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode of the Center Ice Podcast. Again, my name is Seth Chase, and I'm your host. We are going to continue recording this and putting it out on the internet for a little bit until we figure out a date and time that we can go live on 91.1 WHFC, Hartford's home for hockey. Again, I'm so excited to be bringing hockey to the station. It's something that, you know, I've talked about hockey on some of my shows, but it's something else. It's an awesome feeling to be able to talk about hockey and have a separate hockey show that I can just talk about what I love. I mean, it's so much fun to do this, and I cannot wait to start recording next week. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next episode.